because I can't do nothing for you by just putting balls on tees and flipping your balls. If in your mind, you are destroying yourself with negative thoughts, you are destroying yourself about what you can possibly, what the capabilities and possibilities that you have are.
Hey, I'm Ashley Eagle. Some of you might know me as Ashley Burkhart, and I'm a former D1 and professional softball player who spent a few years coaching in the college game before deciding to put all of my focus into youth softball players and helping them make their dreams and their goals happen for them. It's our job to help them unleash their potential and become the athletes they've always dreamt of. I come from a small city in the Midwest and didn't let that stop me from making my goal of playing D1 softball a reality. No matter where you live, you have the tools to help you thrive, and I am hoping through this podcast to help you get there. On this podcast, you'll learn from Olympians, Hall of Fame coaches, and elite players what their journeys have been like, and you'll also learn from me and my family a bit of our journey through the game. I'm so excited to have you here, so whip out your notebook and let's learn how we can grow in this game together. Welcome to When the Cleats Come Off. Hey friends, welcome back, or welcome to When the Cleats Come Off. I am so grateful to have you here today. This has been a long time coming. Many of you have asked for this interview. Many of you have asked for Hitting Coach to Hitting Coach to riff about hitting, and here is the episode for you. It is a long one, so feel free to pause and revisit. To be honest, I'm going to be re-listening to this once it airs because sometimes when I'm doing the interview, I don't always take in as much as I would if I was just sitting back and listening. So as an interviewer, this is a fun fact, you have to be present, but also know where you're headed. So sometimes I miss good things, and I just re-listened to parts of this and I'm like, wow, that was gold the second time I heard it. So this is going to be so much fun. Rob Cruz is here, and we're going to do a lot of things today. We're going to nerd about biomechanics and the similarities of the best hitters and their swings, how coaches can help relay cues to get more out of their hitters. I love knowing that some of the things that I'm saying are things that Rob's saying. Also, we talk about how athletes can understand themselves more as hitters, which leads to that confidence piece, and why focusing externally under pressure and working on this in practice will allow your body to perform more freely and trust what you have taught it to do. Here are some of the things that I was most excited to talk about too. How Rob is teaching empowerment in his lessons, how he's empowering his athletes to perform instead of just focusing on the physical piece, which a lot of us, including myself early on as a hitting coach, need to understand this. You know, if you're a parent working with your athlete or you're a new coach working with athletes, understanding that it's a person first and she has to believe in herself before you're going to get the most out of her. This piece was very powerful, and this is like in the second half of the interview. And also, we kind of dive into some pet peeves that we see with lessons. And this is not to just call out parents. Like, I know you guys are doing your best. I know you're having fun watching your athlete perform, but there are some pet peeves that he and I both agree on that we don't love to see when we're working with athletes, because we see our athletes focusing on you more than themselves. And these are just common things that we see, and that's why we're talking about it, so we all can grow together. So I'm just so excited to have you here. This is such a fun interview with Rob. He is a professional at what he does. He's so good at helping hitters understand big concepts without big words. And it was such a delight to meet Rob and interview him. And I already know I want him back on the podcast. So without further ado, let's meet Rob Cruz. Rob Cruz, you don't know this, but you have come highly asked for from, okay, so I have this Facebook community, and I was like, hey, who are some hitting coaches you want me to interview? The amount of times your name came up was like through the roof. So I literally just messaged you, what was it, like a few weeks ago? And I was like, can you come on my podcast, Rob? And here you are.
Here I am. Let's go.
I am thrilled for this. One, because hitting coach to hitting coach, I feel like we're going to riff into so many areas. But one thing that fascinates me is how passionate you are about softball, but you have come from the baseball world. So like, what brought you here and why are you still here? Because I love it.
That's a really great question. And it's a long story, but I'm going to shorten it. Because you would assume, oh, he's male. He must have come from baseball. But not every male came from baseball.
Okay.
Some males just happened to have had daughters. So they started in softball, not really baseball. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But I did start baseball. I'm just throwing that out there. I did start baseball as a player. I consider myself to be a baseball purist. I cry at Cooperstown. Stats are amazing to me. Like the eras and understanding like how baseball has evolved and changed from being like, you know, you could be 175 pounds and be the best player, you know, in the MLB.
I'm thinking of Ichiro right now.
Right, you know, and then now it's like you got to strike out 200 times, otherwise you got to bat 260 to be in the All-Star game. It's different.
Oh yeah, good point.
But seven people hit 300 last year. Seven. What?
Yeah, what's happening?
Anyway.
Can I throw in my two cents?
Yeah, please.
Is it because baseball is like living and dying on the home run right now?
I think so. Here's what I think.
Okay.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that. I think it's the pitching is just that good.
Mm.
It's just that much harder because now you have a sixth inning guy who throws 100 miles an hour, a seventh inning guy who comes in and throws 100 miles an hour, an eighth inning guy, a ninth inning guy. Where once upon a time the starter went seven.
Sure.
The closer went two.
It's tough.
You got a guy who might come in and just face one batter and empty the tank. You know, like it wasn't like that 10 years ago, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I believe that pitching has the technology in pitching with spin rates and understanding how to, people are developing specific types of pitches, you know, and that do different things with spin rate and spin, and it's hitting is so much more difficult.
Can we argue the same for all the technology that hitting now has?
No, because I think hitting is doing more. I believe that pitching is more of a repeatable thing and hitting is more of a not a repeatable thing.
Sure. There's a lot more complexities.
There's a lot more variability with regards to hitting. Mm-hmm. Speeds and locations and types of swings and types of hitters, righties, lefties, you know. But in pitching, it's like, I want to repeat that again.
Right.
Hitting is like, I can't repeat that again because I don't even know what a pitch is going to do. You know? And I think that's what separates, you know, what makes hitting so much unlike pitching. And with pitching, I feel like you can use pitching technology to develop pitchers a lot easier than you can use hitting technology to develop hitters. You can use hitting technology to analyze hitters, but then the development in hitting is subject to the creator. Like, who's the artist?
Mm.
It's an art form so much more than it's a science.
It is an art form. Mm. Okay, you know, I'm already loving this.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't believe that because science can paint, can give you like, okay, here's my philosophy scientifically. And yeah, you're right. But for this specific person, that's not their reality. So now that us as hitting coaches, it transcends, well, should it be hip first? Yeah, but if it's hip first, if you want to go down that road, if it's hips first, if the kids and the younger players and really think it's hips more or hips first, and the hips do turn, where does the chef go?
They're gone.
And then where does the bat go?
Around, yeah.
And then what about that? What about the outside pitch? So you see why? So I believe it's more eyeballs. We can go into vision too. Like
we will really.
I mean, it is so eyeball driven.
Mm-hmm. It is
cognition driven.
Mm-hmm.
And if we try to teach and develop eyeballs separately from cognition and mindset. Separately from the movements and the sequencing and the abilities of a hitter and how they naturally want to move, it becomes impossible to develop an elite, a true elite hitter. Because there's elite and then there's like everything else.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other world. You played in that world. You understand that world.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in that world, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You don't just say I play softball. No, I play elite level softball. That's way different. Not to knock anyone else, and you can still love the game just as much as I do, or even more than I do. But being at that level is something that you don't understand how hard it is.
It is. It is. And I think what you do such a good job of is you make hitting look simple. And like, that's what other feedback I've gotten from you too. Cause I've stalked you recently in the past week, but like a lot of people are like, Rob does a good job of just like making anybody understand what the heck he's trying to, you know, the point he's trying to get across, which is why I thought you'd be such a fun guest, because to be able to coach like that and teach like that has taken practice. I mean,
well, yeah,
you've been doing it for a while.
Going back to your question of like, how did I get into softball?
Yeah.
To tell you why I got to the level that I've gotten at. And I realized that, yeah, do I know how to use big words? Yes. Does anybody care? No.
Not even the big leaguers care. That's
no
the thing.
No one cares. No one cares that I can break down and I understand biology and I understand biomechanics. Who freaking cares?
Well, I actually care, but I know what you're saying. Like,
because it's totally about how effectively you can communicate.
Exactly.
More than what you actually know.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
If even in my certified stuff with my certified coaches, I'm like, guys, communicate that differently, and you're a better coach.
Mm-hmm.
I know you know. Anybody with a phone can know. You just look it up, and now you know. But can you communicate it effectively? That's where you transform into that master coach, and now you begin to like transform humans into doing things that they didn't even know they can do, which is the fun part. Like, you didn't even know you were a power hitter 5 minutes ago until we showed you something. You're like, oh, I can't hit balls hard. Yeah, you can hit a ball harder.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
What I enjoy about this is the fact that, you know, I go back to the first time I started teaching hitting lessons for a living. It was like 10 years ago. And I was such a bad coach. Like, I would try to spit out 45 things. Like, I want to give you everything in your first lesson. And then I would get those eyeballs and they'd be like, okay. Cause at the end I'd be like, so what did you pick up from today? And they're like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yep. And now it's like, we find one focus for the day and we hammer that focus. And like, that has become, you know, transformative for me, but also the athlete. Like, now that they have an intention to focus on, it has changed the game for how the lesson goes and what they're able to take mm-hmm. aside from just meeting with me. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like you went through a phase similar to that?
Absolutely.
Like at the beginning?
Absolutely. I think we all do. And that comes from passion. I just want to save you.
Yeah.
And all these things are jumping out at me that, oh, I just want to fix you.
Mm-hmm.
Can I fix you, please? And then it's like, okay, well, let's come up with a couple of steps. And what's going to be more foundational? And, mm-hmm. you know, so for me, I like to start with the balance issues.
Yeah.
You know, if we got some balance issues, let's try to figure out how we can get a hitter to be able to be more self-aware. So my new favorite word is introspective. Introspective. How can we get hitters to be more introspective and get them to ask themselves the right questions instead of always judging themselves?
Right.
Was that good?
Mm.
That good? When the question should be, hey, what did I just feel? Like, so those are the types of things that's where I'm at now. In my approach, right? And I think we all have places that we like to go, and because it's growth. It's growth for us. Like you said, it's growth for us as coaches, as givers. Because in order to be a good coach, you have to be a giver. You got to understand that you're giving and we need to give. Givers need to give. Helpers need to help. Like we would, and I don't just say this, we would do this for free.
Oh yeah, we would.
Totally.
Because we
need to do it. There's the difference between us and the others. And I got that from just watching your podcast. Like I know when I, just by watching your stuff too. I looked at it and said, how come I don't know? I know everybody. Why didn't I know her? This is weird.
I've been hiding under a rock apparently.
I didn't know. Listen, I know everybody.
I believe it. And here's the funny thing. I feel like I know everybody. Like that's the thing. Like when I played pro just for 2 seasons,
yep.
like the connections I made in pro ball, like mm-hmm. have just spat out so many connections within. And like even NFCA conferences, like going and meeting people, it's like, mm-hmm. I feel like I knew everybody. And so I'm like, who's this Rob guy? You know? And I'm like looking yep. up your stuff and I'm like, I love how simple he makes things. I love how he talks to the human and not the athlete all the time. Like it's,
ooh,
and that's how you get to, you know, you're probably invited to weddings all the time. You know,
that's like, a good one. I've weddings, bat mitzvahs, birthday parties, everything.
But why do you think that is? Like,
I've allowed my, for the people who allow me to do it, I'm so much more than a coach. So much more. If you allow me to mentor and be that mentor and be that, like when the kids come in, like the first thing we talk about is like, right now it's like everybody's had that first week of school. So, hey, how you like, do you like your teachers? You know, how's everything going? You got to see your friends you haven't seen all summer. You know, I get into their lives. Like, I remember who struggles in math. Hey, how was that chem test last week? Like, I remember those things. Mm-hmm. So my connection is deeper than whether you're dropping your back shoulder or not. That's irrelevant, because guess what? If you don't think that I care about how you're showing up as a person, why would I care about how you can hit a ball? Like, why does that even matter?
Mm-hmm. And even what you give them, they'll hear it more, I feel like.
Definitely.
You know? And sure. You can even get on that player a little bit, but they know that, like, you come from love and, like, that's what you're trying to give. And therefore, they're, like, way more accepting of the criticism when needed, right?
They trust you.
Yeah.
It's a different level of trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
this is awesome.
It is. It's a different level of trust. And when I first started with softball, I wasn't trying to do softball. A team came to me with some 10U girls and some 12U girls, and none of the baseball guys wanted to work with them.
Why?
And I don't know. And we didn't even have softballs. I said, "Yeah, I'll do it." Turned out that particular team had two players on that team that would go on to become like nationally recognized just offensive players. When this is back when home runs wasn't even really a thing. And they were hitting the ball over the fence. Because someone was saying to me, someone actually told me, you can't teach girls how to swing like that because that's not a softball swing. I said, that's not a what swing?
Oh boy.
I said, I'm like, well, sorry, I didn't know that was a rule. I'm a rule breaker, by the way. If everybody's going over there, I'm going over there.
Yeah. I'm here too. I want to be different.
I want to go see what's. Can I go to see what's going on over there? Because I know you guys are over there, but let me just go around there and see maybe something over there. Yeah, so anyway, they're going out and they're playing nationally and they're going all over the country and they're just hitting bombs. And then other people started hearing about it and like, well, who are you hitting with? And then all these girls started coming out of nowhere. They started mm-hmm. coming from everywhere. And the biggest issue that I was finding in softball, at least in my part of the country, which was the Northeast at the time, was a lot of the hitters were taking their top hand. This is late 90s, early 2000s, maybe 99, 98. Top hand here, roll it over, hit your bat, hit yourself in the shoulder here.
That's how I started out hitting.
Okay, now wait.
On the right side.
Yes. So I said to myself, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. But that was the softball swing that everybody was talking about, because in their mind, they were like, but it's quick. I'm quick in the zone. I'm like, okay.
And you're quick out.
Right. We're not going to do that. And people were pissed at me because you can't teach girls how to hit like boys. I'm like, it's not about gender. It's about how the bat should be swung. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with boys and girls.
And I know.
Baseball and softball. So anyway, I'm not the kind of person that's going to try to convince anybody. I just did my thing. So what I did was I started teaching top hand release, top hand off, to avoid the top hand rolling so early.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't realize, this was in the MySpace area, by the way. This is MySpace. That was the only social media. Okay.
Some athletes are going to be listening and be like, say what? What is that?
They need to go do some research. It was the MySpace era. And everybody that had top hand release, what I was doing unconsciously was I was branding the Rob Fruit swing.
Mm.
So every place when you see a girl's doing this and top hand was getting off, oh, that's the Rob Cruz swing. That's the Rob Cruz swing. Umpires were like, you hit with Rob Cruz.
It was amazing.
But I didn't know that was going to happen.
That wasn't the plan. It was just
people started flying in and driving 5 hours to hit and 10 hours and staying, getting hotels. And then I became like the softball guy. And then my baseball lesson, because I was doing baseball pitching, I was doing baseball hitting, I was doing baseball, I was doing catching. I was a facility owner. And I learned biomechanics. We were like, this was back when if you taught biomechanics, you got laughed at back then. Because people were like, biomechanics, see ball, hit ball, get out of here with that stuff, crap. You know what I mean? So it was like, we were on the cutting edge and we were doing things a little, you know, we knew that was coming and we were just a little bit ahead, but we got ridiculed for like biomechanics. What?
And now it's what everybody wants to talk about.
So you got to be willing to kind of, you know, be you and be curious and be willing to do it, not do what everybody else is doing, not be so cliche-ish, mm-hmm. you know, and so also at the same time.
So is that where you had to figure out how to teach biomechanics without making it feel technical? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know muscles are firing, okay. But like...
So in my early learning, that's how I was taught how to teach. I was taught to teach very technical.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taught how to teach. I was taught how to communicate, how to slow down, how to range my tone, how to get closer to talk, how to talk from far away, how to condense bigger sentences into small cues. I don't think a lot of people were actually taught how to teach, but I was taught how to teach by a guy who happened to be a DA, a district attorney from the Bronx, who was an excellent communicator as a lawyer, as an orator. It helped me to be able to become better at communicating effectively. And then I would try to find ways to say it better. How can I say that better? How can I say that differently so that it's easier to understand and better? So I always go back every night when I get home to this day, every night I get home, I play back the recordings of my lessons.
And you probably listen to every podcast episode you put out too.
Sometimes I go back and listen to some of them, some of the old ones, mm-hmm. but I play back what I'm saying to my players. And it may be just on in the background. I'm walking around doing something,
mm-hmm.
but I play it back because I got to hear myself. Oh, I can say that. I can say that differently. I can say that better.
I love it.
You know, that's something that the communication aspect of it is huge.
Yeah. Well, can we just add to the fact that you are still growing yourself? Like, to me, you know, now that I'm a mom, it's kind of interesting how this all happens. I think like the reason why I looked up to my dad a ton, mm-hmm. and like when he was doing things and like working on mastering his own craft and whatever he was doing, and then took my game and we tried to do the same thing with my game. It's like the amount of respect I have for my dad because he like is always working himself. That was inspiring to me. Mm-hmm. And now you are doing the same. Like, if I want to be coached by someone, I want to be coached by someone who's still working on themselves. And they're not like, I know it all. They're like, they keep learning. They keep figuring out how to just be a little bit better. And that's why everybody on my Facebook is telling me to talk to you.
So I want to say this too. I love what you just said. And I agree. I can't be outworked. The amount of studying that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Other sports. How are people in Japan teaching?
Mm. Okay, I got an episode.
Why are they gold medalists?
Okay, I have a whole episode with Natasha Watley on this.
Ooh, I gotta go back.
Oh,
and hear that.
I will send it to you right after this. Like,
I gotta
go
back and hear that.
Like the reason why they're so good, she explained it. And we'll probably go. I'll have to get her back on and talk more about it.
Oh,
but me too. Oh, like, it's so interesting. I want to learn from the best. And if
it is
Japan keeps beating us, I need to look at Japan. I love it. I knew you were a perfect guest.
It's embedded in their culture, though.
It's
Okay. I would think that. And the only reason I say that is because one of my mentors, his name is Ken Ito, Japanese. He played Japanese professional baseball. He's actually an agent currently. So he represents athletes in the American sports market that want to play sports in the Asian market and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also a very smart golf coach. Every time I have lunch with this guy, every time I talk to this guy, I feel like the dumbest person. I'm like, how come I didn't know this?
Yeah.
You know? So, mm-hmm. and he played Japanese baseball in school. And he was just telling me, like, there'd be 50 guys on a baseball team and 9 play. And they literally got 6 days off a year.
Yeah.
You could never do that here.
It's a full-time job for them.
Like it's a different, and I would, you know, that's why I said it's cultural, because we could never do that. We would never want to do that. I want 12 kids on a team. My kid better get 5 innings. My kid better, you know.
It's so different.
It's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm interested in hearing what Natasha, because I know she spent a lot of time over there.
Mm-hmm. So it is a lot of cultural, like the amount of respect they have for the game is the reason why. So again, that's a cultural piece. Mm-hmm. They also, I mean, you think about, they have like Team Toyota, like it's like a line item for this massive company to pay for this professional league, and they get paid. You know what I mean? Like that's why USA players are going over there, is because they are getting paid big time salaries that they're worth, right? And we're getting there. I think we're getting closer, sort of. But like they invest in it because they know it, like they want to be the best.
It also speaks to the level of respect you would have for women by giving them that opportunity.
Right. So what if I told you that Ari Amato was my teammate?
Awesome.
Like
awesome.
I've learned, she didn't speak a lick of English. She had a translator, but like, I learned so much from being her teammate for 1 year, 3 months, for real.
A season, right? A short season. And I got, you know, and we could, this international thing is so different. It's so great. So good. So cool. Because when you get exposure, you were exposed to that, and then it changes you.
Yeah. It was kind of like you meeting with your friend. I would practice next to Yama, and I'd be like, well, I suck. I mean, yeah. Not totally, but you know what I mean?
I get it.
Because they, I mean, shoot, they had front tossers. Do not do this at home. Okay. Everybody listening to this, do not do this at home. But they would toss to each other. So they'd be hitting into a screen, and the person would be right next to the screen, throwing them like a front toss, and they had to hit it straight into the center, which like as a pro, we could do that. But like they've been doing that every day for like 20 years.
That's a level of focus, though.
Yeah.
That's a high level of focus and concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because you don't want to hurt your teammate and hit it in the wrong direction, but you know that the reason why they're standing there is to get you to lock in better.
Yeah.
And that oof, there's a whole lot to be said about the, if you analyze the way different people do different types of drills.
Yeah. And again, we are not like, telling you to do this with your 8-year-old team. Okay.
Do not.
Isn't it interesting? Okay, yeah. So this is where we're kind of going off into our own little land, but there are certain elements that I like watching you teach, and you talk about the back shoulder a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because like you were kind of hinting to this earlier, a lot of people talk about like hips first. But I said this to an athlete yesterday, if we are only holding a bat and we try to go and like we don't have legs, could we hit the ball? Yes. If we only use our legs and don't have arms, we can't hit the ball. So it's like the amount of like work that both of them need to do together is huge. And so you talk about the back shoulder. Can you emphasize why you love focusing on it a lot?
So last year in 2024, back in April, and I'm a technology guy. So like 3D motion capture for me is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot from the kids. I learned a lot from the players. So when I started to measure the 3D motion capture, all of the hitters that I had who were swinging the bat 65 mile an hour plus and had exit velocities high 70s to low 80s, those two athletes, faster bat speed, higher acceleration rates, and higher exit velos, those athletes had a few things in common. One of the things was really good, I call it spine integrity, really good spine angle and spine stability.
Mm.
And spine stability means like they're not moving the spine after heel gets down, after the front foot gets planted, that spine is remaining stable. It's not moving and that head is not moving.
Mm.
That was one of the common denominators, right? So I said, okay, that's one. I got a common denominator, spine angle. Okay. Common denominator number two, head. Zero head movement.
Mm-hmm.
Zero. I'm talking like, so, okay, that's two.
Yeah.
Three was the average degrees of the hip turn or the pelvis turn. And if you start here and your belly button gets to the pitcher, that's 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. So what do you think the average Major League Baseball players, how many degrees their pelvis turns? 30-something degrees. It's like 34 or 5 degrees.
I was thinking like 40s. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's around 40 for different people.
Yeah.
But it's average about 30, 35.
Interesting.
So the key is, can we get the pelvis to stop so that it can decelerate so that the chest and the arms and the back can do what they do?
That's exactly the biomechanics that I love to talk about.
Okay.
Because so basically your core has to stop your hips.
It has
so to. Then the rest can go.
But because people are, and if you ask all your students, where does power come from? All of them are going to say legs or hips.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to say it. What I'm trying to get my hitters to understand is I don't want to put the emphasis on that. Because the bat is not connected to the hips. It's connected to the chest.
Yeah.
So we talk a lot about more about chest because that's what's directionally directing path of bat. So it's funny. Yesterday, I was going to say one more thing. A lot of people are also turning the hips too hard. So the combine data from MLB from minor league baseball players was they were turning their hips like 700 degrees per second. 700 degrees per second. They're turning too hard. MLB players were turning their pelvis 400 to 500 degrees per second. But this part was faster. Hips weren't as fast and hips weren't as like energy consuming. Because you gotta look at it like this. You gotta ask yourself this question. As someone who observes movement, where's the energy coming from?
Ground.
Well, in any movement, whatever.
Right? Oh.
Whatever. Ground, where's it coming from? And then where's it going?
Mm.
So we go. So the three directions that I have come up with, this is actually like Monday, I said it out loud for the first time. I'm like, I never said that before. I just stopped the class, I'm like, I gotta write that down. So it's like this, now I'm gonna start calling it the three movements.
Okay.
The three directions for movement. So first, my front shoulder, which is a part of my chest, is transferring energy into the backside.
Okay.
Right,
so that's a negative move.
That's the first one.
Yeah,
and I'll call it. I like to use the term counter rotation. People call it negative move. People call it a gather, a coil,
yeah,
load, stretch. Like there's different things that people call it. I call it counter or counter rotation a lot. That's my words. And then back shoulder needs to go forward and underneath because a lot of kids are going this way with it. They go down with the
They're
back
dipping.
Shoulder.
Yeah.
Straight down. Mm-hmm. And now your bat is not gaining any ground on the pitched ball.
Right.
You're not going in that direction anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Then because you're gonna end up, they're gonna end up coming up and compensating and trying to create space the wrong way and all those things, right? It's gonna become like you never really recover from that. When the velo gets real, you don't recover from that.
No.
So that's the third one. So I call this move, back shoulder forward and underneath. I call that move pre-contact direction.
Okay.
And then after I hit it, I call that move post-contact direction. Because so many kids are going contact, and then they're finishing in their favorite space because their hips took them there, bang, that way.
Pull side, yeah.
Into the dugout behind them.
Exactly.
They're flying into the dugout behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this term because I hate the word extension.
It's my favorite.
But you know why? No. Here's why I hate it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know it's necessary, but if you ask five people what is extension, you're going to get five different answers.
That's so true.
That's why I don't like the word.
Yep.
So what I started to say in my second book, the second book I wrote is called Swag 101.
Okay.
And I talk about this word. It's called directional extension. I like that word better.
Okay. Because
directional extension.
Yeah. So, where are the powers headed?
Post-contact.
Yes.
Because extension should start just before I hit it, and extension should be after I hit it.
Right, because you want your fastest barrel to be at contact. So in order to do that, that whip has to happen then, like with the barrel.
Your fastest barrel should be right before contact.
And during.
If you looked at it on a swing tracker app, right? You can look at the acceleration rates and how they get higher. Mm-hmm. It should be if you have connectivity, if you connect it mm-hmm. long enough. So we do a lot of short bat work for that.
Yeah.
So that we can get kids to avoid the push. Let's avoid the push. Getting kids to avoid pushing with the hands
is
the hardest thing to teach.
So hard.
It is. It's so hard. And it's the hardest thing to learn.
Right.
It's so hard. Oh, God.
Okay. So I just heard this. You were speaking. I don't even know where you were speaking, but I saw this when you were saying it. But I think that kind of goes along with the people who are confident are like swing fast and the ones who aren't swing slow. But like the reason why I'm bringing this up is because a lot of times if you see a kid gripping too tight, mm-hmm. tension in the shoulders, like mm-hmm. that's when I find the most pushing and the least amount of just like fluidity, that's if that makes sense.
That's interesting.
So I don't know if I'm like mixing the two mind and body, but
I think there's a psychology of speed, which is what I was talking about in the video. That would be the psychology of speed. Mm-hmm. And you're speaking of a physical issue with regards to being slow.
Yeah.
That's a physical issue if I'm over-gripping it.
Right.
But then the psychology of speed is like, how much of a BA do I think I am in the box?
Sure.
Like you have to have that.
Right.
And it's hard to get females because of what the world has told them about themselves growing up. To think and be a boss. And sometimes I find myself like, okay, I need to empower you to understand that just because you come in a small package doesn't mean you can't hit a ball 220. Because nobody has ever told you that you could be and should be.
That is so big. Because okay, so I got into high school, I was 5'1". I'm currently 5'10 and a half. Okay?
Oh, wow.
The amount of people that, you know, early on, they're like, oh, you're small. Like, you don't have to hit it far. And the... I told my dad this and they're like, you do not listen to those people. Like, and then in high school, I'm like this skinny, scrawny kid, but like I'm hitting it over the fence and people are like, how are you doing that? And it's like, because I'm using what I have.
But it started somewhere first.
Right.
Your dad would not let you believe that what was the rhetoric.
This is why my dad's been on the podcast twice now.
That is awesome.
I'm mm-hmm. so glad you're bringing this up because the amount of times I even hear parents, they walk in, they're like, well, she's not meant to hit it over.
Yeah.
And that's all she wants to do is hit it over. So what ends up happening is like the athlete now thinks of herself smaller and then she plays smaller instead of, no, like you are fully capable of hitting it over the fence with what you have. It's going to take a little bit more work to figure out how to get that out of you. But once you do, it's there it goes.
So sometimes I find myself having what I call an empowerment session. Mm-hmm. And this has nothing to do with bat ball. This has everything to do with what this player that's standing in front of me thinks of herself.
Yeah.
Because I can't do nothing for you by just putting balls on tees and flipping you balls. If in your mind, you are destroying yourself with negative thoughts. You are destroying yourself about what you can possibly, what the capabilities and possibilities that you have are. So for example, I had a player in a cage with me one time and I'm like, okay. I could just read her body language after every swing. I could read. I was like, after every swing, I need you to just verbally say out loud something good about your swing. If you swing and miss, what was good about the swing? If you pop it up, what was good about your swing? Because you're focusing on everything that's wrong. And if you can't shift that, and her mom was sitting right there. I said, if you can't shift that, you're wasting your mom's money. You're wasting your time. You're wasting my time. You're taking a spot in this class from someone else who probably needs to be here. But you can't be so negative. So we're going to
can't beat yourself up.
We're going to work on being more kind to yourself. I want you to be nice to yourself. So you have a best friend? She said, you have a best friend. I said, I want you to treat yourself the way you treat your best friend. I want you to talk to yourself the way you talk to your best friend. But somebody had to teach her how to think that way. So guess mm-hmm. what? Somebody has to unteach her.
Right.
How to think that way.
And you're firing different neurons now. Like you're trying to like accumulate the look for the good, find the good.
Look for the good. And then all of a sudden, okay, now we can talk hitting.
Yeah.
After a couple of weeks of just doing that mental exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to hold you accountable for this when you go home. When you go to your team practice, I want to hold you accountable. You make an error, two words you're going to say. So what? You pop a ball up, two words. If you can't say those two words as an athlete and mean it, you're going to have it's going to be tough.
I like that you have them say it out loud because verbally. To me, yeah, that is powerful to be able to say that. I used to do this a ton and now mm-hmm. I'm reminded I should do it more mm-hmm. to like get them to like say it because they keep saying it out loud. Now they believe it and now mm-hmm. their parents are hearing that. And then they can like, speech. That's they can talk about later, you know?
I mean, it's still 80% mental. Whether people want to talk about it or not, nobody wants to talk about it. If I post a post on, go to Instagram, TikTok, whatever.
The lowest views.
Go to all my posts, all my mental game stuff, nobody cares.
I know.
Let me talk about something that doesn't matter as much.
Everybody just wants drills. Just give me the drills.
Guys, it's 80% mental and you don't care about it. This is why you can't hit. You want me to fix this. And you know what I said to a player yesterday? I said, you wish it was your swing. Because then you'd have something to blame it on.
Other than you.
And it's not your swing. It's you. It's your own thoughts. But you wish it was your swing.
Yeah, because people try to outswing problems. You know? It's funny. I just had... So Taylor Shoemaker was my last episode.
Yeah.
And she... Somehow she got into a slump this past year, even though she was, you know, NFC Player of the Year. She's like, I was kind of going through this. Oh, I guess, you know, the streak's kind of going away. And immediately she was just like, I'm not going to be able to out-hit this. I'm just going to have to remind myself who I am and just, you know, trust my preparation. So, like, it was kind of good to see even, like, the most elite hitter, elite freshman in the entire nation in Division One is mm-hmm. even, like, going through some of this of, like, reframing how she's talking to herself. So
self-talk is huge.
Can we talk about parents for a second?
Let's go.
I don't want to ruffle feathers. Most people that listen to this are parents and coaches.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what would you say to a parent who's chirping cues while you're in there working with their athlete of what they should be doing better?
So I've done this and I do this. And I try to do this. First of all, one thing I hate the most is the parent with the phone recording the whole lesson on their kid. Can your kid get a break from just not wanting to be on camera? Did you even ask your kid, hey, is it okay if I record your entire lesson that I'm never going to watch again ever and you're never going to watch again ever? It's like the pressure of having to perform on camera for somebody's kids. Why does everything have to be me performing on the camera?
Yeah, there's like no room for failure now.
Like, you know, like, give it a break. And what are you going to do with that video anyway?
Post it on Twitter, you know? Put in the work.
I mean, if you're getting 10, 12 seconds because you want to do that, that's fine. But right. To sit there and go, I don't know. I don't even know if I would be able to even handle that mm-hmm. as an adult. But I think when the parents want to have input, and what's even worse is the kid that's in the cage with you one-on-one, and then they keep going back after every swing. Looking back at the parent.
Now parents like, stop looking at me.
Now that's the kid who will never hit higher than eighth in a batting order. I said it. You don't have to say it. I'll say it for you. That kid will always be a number eight batter because they don't have the ability to like
own it.
Be mature. Own it was what I was going to say first. You said it for me, but be mature enough to own it. It's like go in a car, go to Dunkin' Donuts and come back. Let them have some independence. Give them a sense of like, hey, you know what? You know, I got this one-on-one time with my coach. It was great. You know, it's funny. I had a kid the other day. And it wasn't because our mom was like interfering with the lesson, but I said, hey, you know what? Let's just pretend right now if there's no adults, it's you and your friends in the backyard. And you want to compete with your friends and you want to try to see who can hit the farthest. Over the trees, over the bushes, into the neighbor's yard or whatever, right? Hit the next three. And she just started whack, whack. I said, and that's how you should play softball.
That's freedom.
Freedom. Oh, God. That word.
Like, imagine if your kid could have that much freedom. And Here's where it's tough, though, because, you know, parents, they want to be involved and they should be, right? Like, they want to know, mm-hmm. you know, because when they go home, that's who they're with. That's who they're going to train with and everything. But like, if we can almost give the athletes the independence to like go through the lesson and then be able to share what they had learned with their parent. Mm-hmm. My dad is at every lesson with me for a year to kind of like get to know the drills and like, yep. so he could hammer those with me right. when I got home and put in the reps.
Right.
But it was more of just like, he was spitting out what the coach was saying and he, like his opinion. Yeah. He threw it in every once in a while, but he would always go back to what was your coach saying?
And reinforcing it.
Yeah.
That would be the reason.
Yeah. But in a lesson, he's not mm-hmm. saying things. It's like, he's sitting back. This is what Sue Enquist said on one of my episodes.
Oh yes.
The best man. Dude, I've had Sue on here.
I'm honored to be on this podcast.
Sue wow. is the best. But she's like, if you're a parent, just sit back and watch a movie. That's what she says a lot. Just sit back and watch a movie. It's like, it's hard to do because they're going to fail out there. And like the thing that we do as coaches is we try to give them an environment where it's like a chemistry lab. Like, let's make mistakes, you know?
You know what? I made a quantum leap this year as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I believe I made this leap, I went to more tournaments and I got to do some in-game coaching. And I got to see firsthand and get a feel firsthand for the actual game environment at a youth game sporting event.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's nothing like being inside of a cage with a carpet with, you know, a screen and...
Yeah, and the environment doesn't really change.
It's nothing like it. And then I'm saying, okay, I gotta say certain things differently because now I really have a better understanding for what they're actually going through in that moment.
Yeah. Can you elaborate?
It helped me. So like, yeah. for example, a big reason why a lot of kids fail is the chase rates are out of this world.
They're chasing bad pitches?
All day. So you have pitchers who say, you have a hitter who's like, oh, that was a great rise ball. No, first of all, it wasn't a rise ball. It was a high fastball. That's one.
This is 10U softball. That is not a rise ball.
This is great. Okay, it wasn't a rise ball. And you're chasing it. So let's focus today on me throwing you balls that are high and you not swinging at them. And we're going to celebrate takes.
Yeah.
Now, some kids think that batting practice is... They think the lesson is batting practice.
Right.
And they think batting practice is, well, if she throws it, I better swing because coach said I only get 10. And I want all my 10. I don't mm-hmm. want six. I don't want six swings and four takes.
Right.
But if we celebrate takes and we make having a good take a thing, yeah, good take. Then it's a different, now we're rewarding the take. The dopamine is like, oh, my teammates love that. Now that's a thing. And then mm-hmm. all my teammates do it. And then I always do it. Oh, right. You're so disciplined. You have a great eye. You swing at good pitches. You have good pitch selection. You have great decision making. Those are those mental, emotional things.
Yeah.
As cage coaches, like, you know, just understanding that that's what happens in a lot of games. So then they come home and they say, oh, I struck out 3 times. Or 4 if you count the one where the umpire called the ball. And they're like, okay. Okay, you struck out
three. Yeah. Times. But how but you like get, you have to train
how,
that.
But mm-hmm. how'd you get to strike three? Because the first two, you probably took one down the middle. That's strike one. Because I heard about you. You always take the first strike. I heard about you. Right? And then you chased one. You chased, you know, or you chased two. So you put yourself in that position to be at have 2 strikes. So say coming home from your lesson saying, oh, I struck out 3 times, doesn't really tell me the whole story because there's no context there.
Right.
So I think we get more context of what they're going through if we're asking the right questions as a coach.
Right. We need to stop creating results-based players, I feel like, because that's all they care about. Mm-hmm. Even though, let's say, one of those balls is like a hard line drive right to the second baseman, they think it was like a fail. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you did exactly what we have worked on, you know? Like, but then their next at-bat's affected because now they're like carrying that with them. Like, oh, now I have to like, you know, try to be more perfect when in reality, that was exactly what you should do and what you should, how you should approach your next at bat too. Like the odds of you hitting it to the same spot twice.
You would appreciate this. You would appreciate this, what I'm going to tell you now. You'll appreciate this. And I want the parents to appreciate this. And I want the coaches and if there's any players out there listening to also, I want you guys to appreciate this. I taught my kids how to evaluate a game and after a game. And they have to ask themselves the right questions. And the first question they should ask themselves is, did I get some good pitches to hit? And if I didn't get good pitches to hit, then that means I should have walked. If I did get good pitches to hit, the second question is, did I hit it hard? Because that takes care of like 0 for 2 and 0 for 3.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me you went 4 for 4. What does that mean? You had 3 dink hits? I don't care that you if you went 4 for 4. I want to know if you hit the ball hard or not. Because if you hit the ball hard, let's go. We're doing it. And it's how do I analyze my game? I hit the ball hard, just right at people. Great. Or I went 4 for 4 and I didn't hit the ball hard. The stats don't tell me, like to your point, the stats don't tell me whether or not you had a quality at bat.
Right.
And you had, you know, good barrels, you know, you caught some barrels that day, or whatever it is, whatever terminology you got going with your kids. But we know, we come in, hey, how was the weekend, guys? How'd you do? I hit the ball hard. Did you hit the ball hard? Not really. Not, you know, why? Why did you hit the ball hard? Well, I feel like I was missing underneath. Or I feel like I was a little early. Or I feel like I was a little late. Now we know why we didn't hit the ball hard. So that's what we work on today. Today we're working on being more on time, understanding contact space. And if you pop one up, the next swing, I expect you to get on top of that pitch. And I need you to make that adjustment here without me telling you. Because if you pop up 3 in a row, that means you didn't make the adjustment of getting on top.
And if that's where I gave a kid a burpee.
Bingo.
And you make the same mistake 3 times.
Right, because you didn't make the mental adjustment. Because who's going to remind you in the game? So now we're doing something different in a hitting lesson. We're incorporating mental skills. We're incorporating the mental game. Because it's the players who are really good, they make adjustments early. They make adjustments immediately. They're aware. They have introspectivity. They're introspective. And I think that's kind of where I've been going more or less. I want these kids to be so much more intuitive about their own bodies and their own approach.
Mm-hmm.
And learn to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't even put an age on it. I mean, you could be 11 and understand that. It's not even that, oh, they're still young. Yeah, but they have a brain. They can think.
Can we play a game real quick? This is totally on the spot. No. This will be easy for you.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to give you a result that a player had and how she should go about her next at bat based on the result she had. Like, so let's say like in the cage.
Pitch. Oh, in cage?
Yeah. So let's say result like in a game was like pop up. So it's a righty batter, pop up to left. And it was like, she got way under it. What cue are you going to have her try to think about her next at bat or in the cage if that's the next pitch?
Or the next pitch. Okay.
Yeah. Really got under it. There's real no simple, way that's not simple.
Get on top. Get on top of something.
Good. I like it. Let's say she's fouling off pitches like it's her day job. Everything's going to her pull side insanely.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to cue?
Get 1 inch off the plate and go to right center.
1 inch off the
she's
plate.
Probably, she's probably too close to the plate.
Yeah. Okay.
That's probably
so a righty batter, go to right center.
And what I'm doing for you, what I'm doing is if I'm in a game at third base.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I'm cueing them. If I'm going to say anything, I'm giving them small cues based on what I'm looking for in terms of in-game adjustments.
I love this stuff because mechanically the hitter's going to fix it without thinking mechanics.
Right. I'm not giving them mechanics.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's what most people forget about when it comes to games. A lot of people are like, yeah, my player can't do, you know, what they do in the cage in a game. This is why, because she's thinking, what am I supposed to do with my hands? Instead of if I'm trying to drive it to right, if I'm trying to get on top of the ball, my attack angle is now line drive instead of loop de loop skyrocket.
I didn't give you mechanical cues.
Right.
Or I didn't give you an internal focus. I gave you an external focus.
Yeah. And now you're executing it.
Bingo. Your body will self-organize to the external focus.
Do you ever find that your athletes will like meet themselves in the middle? Like, hey, you're popping up like crazy. Let's hit something hard on the ground. And then boom, it's a line drive. It's like right between.
A lot of kids want it to be a mechanical answer from you.
Correct.
Because that's how they were trained.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't train them that way, they won't be that way.
Right.
I try to encourage my players to be more externally focused. Because if you get a player who can take it off the body, that's the other thing that slows kids down too, is when they try to think their way through the movement process.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if I'm thinking external, okay, next pitch, I'm looking for, or here's one. I'm looking for something. Okay. We got a pitcher in the game, and this is a game. I'm a game coach. I'm third base box. She's throwing everything outside. I want you guys to get a little closer to home plate. She's very comfortable throwing the ball away. And we're going to try to use the other side of the field, and we're going to try to hit a field goal in between right center and center field, or between right field and center field. That's all we're doing. And now everybody's like literally trying to hit the ball into that spot, into that space.
Because it's a focal point to try to go attack. And you're given the pitches that are going to make that be able to happen. Like if they're thinking right center, and they're given an inside pitch, they're not going to go for it.
Because most people are going to say, let the ball get deep.
Mm-hmm.
That's too much. Like they're going to be late now. Let them figure out where it's going to happen. They'll figure it out.
Especially
if you let them do it in practice, and you let them do it in cage.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I want you to find your space. Find the space. I'm gonna throw you 10 outside pitches in a row. I need you to figure out where it has to be hit. We're gonna hit it the hardest. And I'm not gonna say one word. You may suck on the first five. Great. Because when they figure it out on their own, they learn it faster and it sticks. When I have to constantly give them directions, hey, go down two blocks, make a right turn at the mailbox, go down to the stop sign. But if you pass the streetlight, you went too far. Like, it's just too much for them.
Too much.
Too much for anyone. They will figure it out. I promise you, they will figure it out.
You know, when I started approaching that with the outside pitch for myself, because I'm 6 foot, that was like my kryptonite. I would just extend my hands. Even in college, I would just extend my hands and it'd be like this dink hit. Mm-hmm. And I just looked like an idiot. And when I made the approach of like, I don't have to hit that so far deep. Like I got these long arms.
Somebody said it.
So I was like, literally my approach then was like, smoke it up the middle. And then all of a sudden, I know that's probably, but like, as soon as I had that mindset, I was hitting it a little bit more out in front, but my long arms were able to get there. And I was hitting it to left center without like hyper-focusing on hitting it to left center. Like, I don't know. It just...
So let me just say this, because this is when I post stuff about contact depth on the outside part of the plate, right? When I post different things and I talk about it. If you go back and look at my page, I have the most comments, the most hate, the most views, the most arguing on the... When you talk about outside pitch and where does the ball get hit? Because the problem is that most hitting coaches are going to tell you, let it get deep. But they don't tell you how deep.
Yeah, no or one, what no, that looks like.
No one ever says how deep. No one's ever said it.
Mm-hmm.
No one. So I try to get kids to focus on, and it can be different for different pitches in terms of different height too.
Sure.
But it's somewhere around the front foot. It could be a little bit deeper than the front foot, maybe a softball deeper. Or it could even sometimes be, depending upon where your head and nose are, a half a ball or a ball in front of your front foot, but it's somewhere in that space. But it's still going to be deeper than the ball that you pull.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think a lot of people aren't comfortable with that idea because they think that it has to be one way.
Right.
But, and sometimes it's about perception too.
Everybody's different.
Right. Yeah. It could be about, I'm perceiving that I'm hitting it deep. Fine. I'm going to leave it alone. If that's where you think you hit it.
Yeah.
Right.
And so for some people it works. Like I like to focus on hitting it deep. Not for me. I want to hit it up the middle. And that's where I hit it the hardest.
Of course you do.
Can I actually have a game scenario I'm thinking of. Playing Michigan. Mm-hmm. They're ranked number 4 in the nation. We're Purdue. We're like halfway through the Big Ten. We're not supposed to beat them. Mm-hmm. And I remember I hit this triple and I can't remember who was pitching. I wish I knew. But this is like Sierra Romero time. Okay.
I do that.
Yeah. And so we were playing at our home field, which doesn't even exist anymore. It's plowed over. Now there's a brand new stadium that's $13 million. Pretty legit. Ooh. But this is when we had porta potties, okay? At our first field. Anyway, I remember like pressing game. Like it was just back and forth and we were in it. And this pitcher loved to throw outside to me because my freshman year, I couldn't hit the outside. So they're trying to hammer me outside. I'm like, you know what, Ash? She gives me that. I'm just going to smoke it up the middle. I'm going to like prove a point, hit it right at her face. Jacked it to left center, got a triple on it. And it was, and that was the game we won. So I'm just like sitting here. I'm just like, dude, that simple mentality of just like drive it up the middle, even though it's unconventional, mm-hmm. it literally worked with me in game in that pressure situation mm-hmm. because I was just focused on doing that with the pitch. And everybody's going to have a different perspective on what they need.
I want to ask you a question.
Oh, God. Welcome. Okay.
Your change-up approach.
Mm.
You got a pitcher who throws a lot of change-ups. You're expecting that you're going to get a lot of change-ups. Do you sit hard and adjust soft, or do you sit soft and adjust hard? And if you, and if it's different, what situation would it be different?
Never tried to sit on a changeup. Mm-hmm. I trained my eyes to know that it was coming when she released it. So I like when I saw it coming, I was able to keep my hands back and still barrel it up.
That's interesting.
Like to me, if I'm seeing a changeup and I know it's coming, I'm thinking single. Like, but again, I had to train myself to have that mentality. But I was just like, let's punch it somewhere. And I've hit multiple changeups over the fence, mm-hmm. but I never tried to hit a changeup. I trained myself to react. So I was looking fast, react to slow.
So you, okay.
That was just me though.
I ask a lot of people that. I always want to find out, because obviously people are different.
Right. And like in the back of my mind, mm-hmm. if I know she has a slow pitch, I'm going to try to indicate what does that look like out of the hip.
So preparation is important for you.
Oh, huge.
But before the game to know how they throw their pitch.
Sure. Yeah. And like even in game, you know, because like you watch a video, it's different. Like it's, mm-hmm. You just don't get the same
mm-hmm.
look. But yeah, so I'm trying to find like what's different about her. Mm-hmm. Taylor Shoemaker just said that she's like a dumb hitter. I kind of was the same, but like because I don't want to know too much. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be able to feel my way through an at bat, feel my way through adjustments. And like if I look like an idiot on a changeup.
Can I say something? That was gold, what you just said.
What?
Oh my God. I don't want to know too much. I want to feel my way through it. And I think sometimes, especially like the kids that I'm working with that are like, oh, I'm going to Princeton. Oh, I'm going to Tufts. Like, you guys are overthinking this thing. And I do want you to be smart, but I don't want you to overthink it. And how do you balance that? And have you ever felt yourself, I'm thinking too much here. Let me bring it back to simplicity. And what do you do?
If I'm over,
sorry, I don't mean to interview you on your own podcast.
I was going to say, I guess I should just be a guest on your podcast. No, I'm kidding. If I find myself overthinking, okay, so mm-hmm. I had a place where I always went. Okay, like when I knew things were going crazy. I have also read the books. I think I have. There's a lot of really good books. But I do remember reading. I think it was Heads Up Baseball, like the book, right?
Yeah, that is the book.
Okay, Heads Up Baseball. I remember
Kevin Visa and
yes, Kevin Visa. Yep.
Yeah.
That one.
Tom Hanson.
So he talked a lot about like focal points and like mm-hmm. what's going to be your spot that you're going to focus on. And like for me, I would like go venture off, I'd find a flag or something and just stare at it for a second and visualize myself like punching it right back to the pitcher as hard as I possibly could. So like if I was overthinking, mm-hmm. I would look at the pitcher and be like, I'm going to hit you. And like that was my way of like going back to just hit her, you know? And like mm-hmm. in order to hit her, I'm gonna have to go for pitches that I can hit her with. So okay, this sounds bad. I've only hit like a few pitchers like in real life. I've never drastically injured anyone. And the odds of you hitting the pitcher is very small. But like that was my center focus because when I can, one, I need to make sure I drive it up the middle. Mm-hmm. Second, I don't want to try to lift it. I'm trying to hit her with it. So like that shortens trajectory. And like with my bat path, which I never mentioned this, but I do let go of my top hand too, like almost do like a dab. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I find myself kind of dipping a little. So if I'm trying to hit her, my angle of attack is much steeper. So sorry, I'm getting into all these.
No, because this is good because it leads me to another question, if you don't mind. This is what I would call an approach.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did it take you to realize that this approach is the approach that worked for me. And this is going to be my approach, or one of my approaches. Because right now I'm working with a lot of players that I'm trying to get them to understand how to develop an approach, especially if you're a 10th grader who's college bound. Mm-hmm. We're getting you ready for freshman year college. You got to win a position. You got to win a spot. That's what we're getting you ready for in 10th grade. And in order for you to be able to do that, you have to have an approach that's yours.
Right. And my approach is different throughout my career because I was like a triple threat for most of my career before I was just simply a hitter my last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So when I was a slapper, my approach was make the defense look stupid.
Okay.
Right. That was my approach. So I'd like find the weakest link and try to, you know, exploit them. Then my approach when I was solely a hitter and bunter, because, you know, when you hit a bomb, my favorite thing to do is go drop a bunt as soon as, if you're going to give me that, I was fast. So like, I want to take, I want first. I like to steal bases too. So like, again, I knew myself though. Yeah, I think that's the key to your approach, is like knowing what
self-awareness.
Yeah. Like what, knowing your swing, knowing what it needs. Mm-hmm. So for me, hitting a line drive right at the pitcher was like what I needed to get back to, you know, getting rid of my bad tendencies and focusing on the ones that work.
Yeah. This conversation is fire.
I know. Okay. We do need to end it though, because you need your nap before your practice later.
Yeah. But, I gotta take a nap. Yeah.
You gotta take a nap. I need a nap. But no, this was so good. And obviously you're coming back on. Can we just,
yeah, of course.
I mean, there are so many things that I thought we'd talk about from a mechanic standpoint, but I think even before you can get into the mechanical side, you have to know who you are as a hitter and the identity piece. And I just love learning about like how you teach as well. So this was fire, just last thing I want to make sure we hit on is like, if people aren't following you, which they probably are, but like, where can we keep looking at Rob Cruz and what he's up to with Complete Game?
I mean, I try to
make myself, wants to go.
I try to make myself visible. I mean, I pretty much post the same content on all the major channels. So that would be TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. But on YouTube, you could find things on there that's longer form content, that are more seminar, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 40 minutes here. And then I also have a podcast called Transcending Sport, and you can find me on anywhere you stream. I'll tell you right now, I don't have a regularly scheduled podcast where like every Thursday at 7:30 in the morning is going to find it. But, you know, when I can find the time and it's time to talk to someone, I try to find the right people to have these conversations with. Now, I think I'm going to have to, if you have some time, you might be one of my go-to.
Oh, I got time.
We got to talk. Can you come on my podcast? I got something I want to talk about. I want to hear, hear your thoughts on it. Let's chat. You know, and then I can introduce you to my audience.
Yeah. Transcending
my
sport.
My audience is going to love you. I promise. I have a serious audience. Like they are really.
I already know my audience loves you.
This is great. This has been great. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we got the chance to kind of talk and got to meet you.
Me too. Well, I'll make sure to put like all the links that you just described in the show notes to make it easier for people. But I do want you to talk about, because you said with Transcending Sport, it's not just about like the mechanical pieces. It's more of like person. Like when you get people on and you interview them, like what is the goal with Transcending Sport?
Well, it started off as that. When I started the podcast Transcending Sport, I wanted to do something different. I'm always trying to do something. Okay, what does the game need? What do we want and what do they need? So I started off with I would invite people who like had an invention out there. A guy who was the owner of a bat factory. You know, tell me about you. How'd you get into it? Like, there's so many interesting people in the world that never get to tell their story, because what makes people interesting is their stories. The stories are like that's the interesting piece that we don't get to see and get to talk about.
Yeah,
like, how'd you end up doing that? What was it like being over there? Like, you know, talk about that. And you'd be surprised what stories you can extract from people.
Yeah.
And when they start sharing, like, and I learned that because when I was younger, like we, in my family, we had to read one autobiography every year. And when you read an autobiography, you look at that person and what that person has accomplished, but you never get to see unless you read their autobiography.
Right.
They went through that. How could they even go through that? And you have a newfound respect for that person.
Right.
Like that's what they did is nothing compared to what they've gone through. Mm-hmm. Which, to my point, I believe that the more you go through, the more adversity that you can overcome, the higher you can go in whatever you're doing. That is a fact.
Drop the mic. Yeah. So I'm excited to dive into like your interviews there, because one, podcaster to podcaster, I find that the same. I love learning how people are the way they are. I think it's so unique. And like a lot of people only see the surface level of what's on Instagram, what, you know, the pretty stuff. And it's like, the reason, like, that really hard thing you went through is actually probably why you're at this elite level. Like,
exactly.
But most people think it's just all good, you know?
Can I say this? When I have a kid that I'm coaching and I know that they're going through some things on a personal level, a part of me hates that they have to go through it. But another part of me also knows when this kid comes out of this, he's going to be fierce. Mm-hmm. She's going to be a force to reckon with. She doesn't even know it right now. She has no idea like what she's been chosen for.
Yeah.
10 years from now, 50, I have no idea what it is. No one does.
But when it does happen, you're like,
oh my God, she's going to be so ready.
Parents, I think, and coaches, I think this is the key for us. We mm-hmm. need to discover that in our kid and that they need to go through this. We're at a point right now where we're getting a little soft. So like,
we are. We're protecting them from their own fate, their own destiny.
Right.
We're trying to protect them from like, dude, they need that, because that's going to get them ready for that they're going to do something great one day.
Yeah. They got to get used to failure, man. They got to get used to it.
Failure is required. In my domain, when you come in, like, oh, you will fail. You will feel like you want to cry at some point in this lesson.
And we will celebrate it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you will work through it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is good. We can talk about
so that. Fun. So fun. Rob, thank you for your time. This was so fun. I can't wait to see what more we put together.
I can't wait. Let me know when it comes out so we can make sure we share it.
Okay. I will. Right. I will. I'm so grateful for you, and keep doing what you're doing, because it is fun to watch.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. This was such a joy. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I loved having it. If you can't tell, I was very enthusiastic throughout this entire interview. And if you thoroughly enjoyed it, please, please share it with a friend, first and foremost, that you think would find value from this conversation. Also, if you want to head to wherever you listen and write a review, leave some stars, I would absolutely love that. It helps this podcast grow naturally. But also, we have this Facebook community, and you guys are the ones that brought Rob to this show. So I love hearing feedback from you guys of what you enjoyed most from each interview. If there are things that you'd want us to elaborate more on next time he's on, like, let's go to the When the Cleats Come Off community on Facebook. The link is in the show notes, and let's talk about this episode. I love talking about it, hashing out on some ideals. There may be things that you disagree with. Let's talk about it. Like, I am here to talk all things good, bad, ugly from every episode, and let's do it. Let's get in that chat box in the When the Cleats Come Off community. If you haven't joined already, all you got to do is answer a couple questions and agree to not be a bully, and you're in. So go ahead over there and I'll meet you there. Also, last thing, if you want to learn a little bit more about hitting, and some of the concepts you were like, oh my gosh, I want my daughter to learn some of these, whether she has a hitting coach or not, I would love to have her inside my virtual hitting academy community. I say this because some hitters really, they hear concepts from some coaches, but they get more out of others. So if you feel like this is the way your athlete would want to be coached, I want to coach her. We can either have her join just the monthly membership where we do workshops every week. You basically see my face every week and we either talk hitting or mental game. And sometimes we even hit together. We stretch together. We take care of our bodies. These are all concepts that I find that are so important for the athlete to understand, especially that mental piece of the confidence behind the athlete. We hit on that probably more than the hitting part sometimes. So that's in our silver membership. Our gold membership, you're going to have to reach out to me and get on the wait list for it, because we're not opening up doors for the gold membership specifically until January again. But that is where we dive way deeper into the swing piece. You're going to send me videos once a month. We're going to have calls twice a month talking about your hitting. We can talk about mental game too, but that's a lot more of the one-on-one interaction. So if you're interested in that, go ahead and just check it out on my website, ashleybtraining.com. I love teaching hitting. And you know who I love learning from? Rob Cruz. So go follow him on social media. All of the links to follow him are in the show notes. We just love helping athletes discover the best versions of themselves. Ironically, we do that with hitting, but there are so many other ways to do that. So go follow Rob. He's one of my favorite new follows, and I can't wait to get him back on. All right, that was a long episode. Thanks for sticking with me. Do not forget to stay awkward, stay humble, and keep smiling, and I will see you next week.